This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
On the line today, I have someone that I really admire, who's my favourite comedian of all time. I'm speaking with comedian, actress and author Mary Custis about her new book, All I Know, which is the memoirs of love, loss and life. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Anastasia.
Yeah. Now, Mary, what inspired you, what motivated you to give us a chunk of your life, let us into your private life?
Well, I've never been one to give that stuff over easily because not because I'm hiding anything, but because I thought it took away from the work if people are thinking about your private life when you want them to believe what they're watching.
Yeah.
Green. But this became, especially in the last chapter of the last couple of chapters of the book and the story that the Good Weekend ran with, it became a bigger story than I could have ever imagined, and had a lot of twists and turns, and I just felt compelled to write it for myself. I've always written when things were difficult. You know, that's my sort of therapy. It's a bigger story than the one that the Good Weekend people put in, and that was an extract from my book, but obviously it can't put the whole book in. I've had a very close relationship with death my whole life. Like, my dad was dying before I was born, and he was the closest person to me. And so I've lived with the threat of losing the most important thing to me a lot in my life. And the book covers three deaths: my father's, my grandmother's, which was perfect, and then my daughter's, which was, you know, tragic. And so I just felt like I was writing a lot around that period. I'd written a lot around my dad's death. And in the lead up to the book, I had written so much about my daughter's death and the pregnancy that was very, very complicated. And I sort of survived it because I reached out to write, and I reached out to my friends and family and husband. I didn't shut down. I didn't blame anyone. I just chose to live with the pain and find a way through it. For me, it was a very cathartic experience to do all the writing beforehand, much of which is not in the book.
Yeah.
Sort of emails, letters to God, letters to my child, all sorts of journal entries and all of that. And I've got a great literary agent who I did an Effie book with years ago.
Yeah, which was the one for teenagers,
Being Up Yourself. She did that with me, and I love her, and she's the best literary agent in the country. And I just, my husband George said to me, "Mare, just write it into a book. I mean, this is just such a big story, and it would not only be good for you, it'd be good for anyone that read it." And I said, "Oh my God, it would completely out us."
Oh.
And he said, "I don't care." And I thought, well, if he doesn't care, I mean, I didn't care for me, because, you know, I choose to do something for a living that exposes my feelings all the time, my interpretations of things, and I know I hide behind characters and other people's words most of the time. But, you know, I didn't do anything illegal. Like, you know, it was a story that was a big story. And I think death being such a big taboo, particularly in the Western Anglo culture, it was something that, you know, I was heartbroken by but not uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
I had a lot of experience with it. And I felt like, you know, I wanted to exercise as much as the grief as I could, much as it never leaves you. But I felt like by writing the book, it would certainly ease something up in me, and releasing it so it's not just in my head and in my inner circle. I just wanted to, because for many years I had people saying, "Well, why aren't you working more?" and feeling sorry for me, thinking that, you know, it was the industry that had stopped me from doing as much as I normally do. And it wasn't. It was my pursuit of motherhood. And I made a different decision to, you know, go towards the direction that I knew I needed, you know, spiritually in my life, which was to become a mother. And that took a lot longer than I ever imagined. And it was a lot more difficult than I ever imagined. So, you know, it puts to bed a lot of the questions that a lot of people had about, you know, where had I been? What was I doing? And a lot of the awkward questions around motherhood that you get at a certain age, especially when they know you're in a great relationship and you're the type of person that, you know, is into family. So it wasn't to shut them up. I think it was to open me up and just to relieve myself of a lot of what was swimming around in my head and heart. Just let a little bit of light in, and writing did that for me, and this book has done that for me. And the great thing is it has had such a huge ripple effect.
Yeah.
Good Weekend had more letters in response to the extract from my book on Saturday to almost any story they've ever had.
Yeah. Were you shocked when you saw the when you saw it? Were you like, oh my God?
I was pleasantly shocked.
Yeah.
But I've got to say, when I finished writing the book, I felt like I'd written something that was going to mean something to a lot of other people, not just me. It just elevated itself to another level than what I was expecting. Sometimes you do that creatively. You know, if you're very open and willing, the work sort of takes a whole other perspective that is bigger than your imagination. And I felt that a lot with the early work that we did with the boys, you know, the Wogs Out of Work. You know,
yeah.
I've had that feeling before in regards to stuff that I've been part of.
Yeah.
And I certainly had it with this when I finished the book. I went, oh, okay, this is its own entity, you know, separate to the fact that it came out of me.
Yeah, absolutely. But Mary, what I'm really curious about is, where did you draw your strength from? How did you survive it?
Well, I think for me it's pretty simple. Because I loved those people that died so much, I didn't want to hold them responsible for ruining my life, because none of those deaths were deliberate. You know, it wasn't some sort of attack on me. It was just something that happened. And everything was done to prevent all of that. But
yeah.
That's just what life gives, you know. Like there is loss in life, and I wouldn't limit it to death. I would, you know, and I think that's why this book has got long legs, is because it is loss of any sort. It is heartbreak, it's loss of a relationship, loss of innocence, loss of a dream, you know, death, anything. It sort of really encapsulates just living with grief. And I didn't want to hold them to ransom for my life. And also, I'm a happy person. I'm a naturally happy person. I wake up happy until I remember something. You know, something that, you know, until I remember the reality that I might be finding myself in during that period. And I also think that my mother's been a big influence. You know, she was widowed at 48 when my dad died. And she says incredible things, you know, as most Greeks do, because the Greek language is so poetic and...
Oh, it's beautiful.
Sort of 3D. She says things like, 6 months ago, she said to me, what did I think? Did I think that I could beat death, you know? When your father died, did I think that, you know, I wasn't willing to die? So why was I inviting that emotionally into my life?
Yeah.
And I'd already made those decisions beforehand, but she articulates that stuff really, really well. And it's only through experience do you know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we all sit there and speculate, oh, I'd be like this. And, you know, I think that's why, you know, you have to take risks in life, because it's the only way you can really know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only under extreme conditions that we, you know, we see what we're made of. And I've been under those extreme conditions a lot. I've had a lot of highs in my life and I've had a lot of lows. And there's not a lot of in between, I suppose, because I know that the lows that I've experienced, I know what that feels like, so I go out of my way to create the highs in order to get the balance that I need in order to stay sane.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, I'm not perfect at all. There were times where I thought I was literally going to go insane, where, you know, it was just too much to take on, but I didn't.
Yeah, and I mean, it could have been really easy. I mean, a much easier option would have been to give up, and I think that's what readers are going to draw from it. I mean, they'll be inspired by your incredible strength, and I mean, it sounds like you've gotten a lot of that from your mum and your dad's death.
I don't know whether I'd call it strength. I think that it sort of ends up becoming that, but I get the benefit of making different choices. And I think it's really easy, and I think a lot of it centres around guilt, which Greeks don't suffer a lot of. You know, we're not like the Catholics that have guilt as a controlling mechanism,
yeah.
within the morality of that religion.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't suffer a lot of guilt, because I try to be really true to what I feel at the time, and throughout the book, and the book is a bigger picture view. You know, there's a lot of humour in the book. There's a lot of stuff that is a relief to the drama.
Yeah.
That's how I look at everything. Even at my father's funeral, or even in my darkest moments, I see funny things, you know, and only because they're happening, because people are out of their comfort zone and they don't know how to behave, and you don't know how to behave. And so it becomes very absurd, and because of that, it's particularly funny.
Yeah.
You know, you could be, you know, in your weakest moment and your darkest moment, and then something, you know, happens that takes you out of that. And I think that's a survival mechanism. And But I didn't feel a lot of guilt because I wanted to laugh as well. You know, because I knew that was the only way I could get through. And it wasn't to deny, it was just to recognise what else was happening. And I go into this a lot in the book. There's a lot of contrasts that rock up at the highest highs and the lowest lows. You know, at my wedding, it was the happiest day of my life, but my dad wasn't there. And I'm not going to say that it affected the day at all, but there were moments, especially in my speech, where, you know, where I talked about the fact that it's hard when your dreams come true to not want to share them with the people that mean the most to you, and no one meant more to me than him. Yeah. So, you know, in those sort of moments, you feel it for a moment, but I wasn't going to rob myself of happiness because my dad fought with everything he had to stay alive. And in the end, I realized that I was trying to keep him alive for my sake, not his, because he was so compromised physically that I couldn't have been thinking about him. And death does make you greedy. The possibility of death makes you want more memories, more time, more this, more that. And it's not having the other person's best interest in mind, you know. And you realise that. You realise that with time, and you might even realise that in the moment, that, you know, people will do their best to, you know, very few people want to die, you know. It's our instinct to try stay alive with everything we have. I mean, unless you're heartbroken to a degree where you can see no hope, then you try to stay alive. So, you know, you've got to be really true about what's happening at the time and not get self-obsessed.
When I read bits of it, I just went, this book is going to conquer my fears around death, because let's face it, most people feel incredibly uncomfortable talking about death. Mm. And it's unavoidable. We're all going to die, but we avoid it completely. It's one of my biggest fears. Like, I'll find myself having scenarios in my head about, oh my God, what am I going to do when my dad passes away, or mum, because I'm also very close to my father. And the thought of it scares the crap out of me. But I kind of feel that by reading your book, it's going to give me strength and have another perspective to it.
Look, I think, you know what, you surprise yourself constantly by how, you know, the thought of something is often a lot more difficult than the reality of it.
Yeah.
And I talk about that a lot, you know. And my waters broke at 21 weeks, so I was hospitalised for 2 weeks and praying that I wouldn't go into labour with my daughter. And I was, you know, so terrorised by the idea that, you know, that I would go into labour and that would be the end of the road for, you know, for me, in terms of, you know, my daughter wouldn't have survived it. And it was a very different feeling to when, you know, and I went into labour 2 weeks later on the first day of week 23. I knew when I woke up that day, without any physical signs, I knew that that was the day. And it didn't happen until 10 o'clock that night, but the contraction started at around 6. And so I was so fearful of it. And it wasn't how I imagined it to be. It was nothing like what I imagined it to be. There was a lot of highs. There were highs in the most difficult thing I've ever experienced. And I would never have anticipated that.
Wow.
I would never have anticipated. I mean, I was scared to see what she might look like, because in my imagination, you know, it was a horror show, because, you know, she was so little, and you know, how would she look, and was I going to see something that would, you know, scar me, and you know, all of that. And it was the opposite.
Oh my goodness.
The opposite. And I think that you've got to stay in it to win it, to use an old cliche. You
know,
you've really got to, you know, let yourself be tested in life, and really put a lot of effort into imagining that you will survive it and come out better for it. And you know what it's like with the Greek culture. We don't deny grief.
No.
The person dies, whether you knew that person or not. If you even knew the child of that person, whatever, you had any relationship with the family, you go to the house.
Yes.
At 40 days, that house is open to receiving condolences. You go to the funeral, then there's a 9-day service, a 40-day service, a 3-month service, 6 months, 9 months, 1 year, 3 years. There is no forgetting that somebody died, or that the people that were closest to that person are in pain. So there is a lot of community support. And I wrote this book originally as a thank you to my friendship, because they had nothing to lose by me. You know, it wasn't like a husband or a family member that would lose a grandchild or a child because of what happened. I didn't feel any obligation, any guilt around, you know, the perspective of my friendships, because, you know, they were only thinking about me. They didn't, you know, it wasn't going to be their grandchild or their child, and they had their own family. So I really gravitated to my friendships, which I always have. because I've only got a mother and a brother in Australia. You know, most of my relatives live in Greece and always have. So, you know, extended family for me is friendship. You know, the chosen loved one, you know, and we're very, very close. There's probably about 10 or 12 of us, some of which are overseas, that are always around in one way or another, constantly in each other's lives and supporting and having fun and doing whatever we've got to do in order to, you know, maintain some health around, you know, difficulty.
Yeah.
And that really helped me, and that was my scaffolding, you know.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, my husband who was incredible, and my mother who helped me through it, my in-laws, my brother. There's a lot, you know. I never felt alone. And I think when we isolate ourselves and blame everyone because we're in pain, we minimize our ability to recover, and we end up really changing the outcome of our lives and compromise our character. And I was not willing to do that. Like I said, nothing was deliberately done to me.
Yeah. You
know, it happened.
It happened, and that's, yeah.
And it's happened worse to other people. And, you know, mine wasn't, it wasn't a criminal act. You know, it wasn't like someone, like I think of, you know, all these crimes that are happening every day, and being a family member of someone who was randomly raped and killed or anything like that. And I think I can't say that I would have any idea how to recover from anything like that. That is from nowhere. That is without any preparation, without any understanding of logic that those events happen. The deaths that I experienced weren't like that. But pain is pain, and it's very hard to compare pain because you're just feeling it at the time.
Exactly.
But we also have the capacity to feel a lot of happiness and joy, and I think it's really important to assume that those feelings will come back.
Well, look, Mary Custis, I think your book is going to be life-changing for so many people because it covers all spectrums. I mean, even, you know, families that are starting to want to have children, it covers everything. Again, it's about facing death. I mean, like you said,
ultimately the book's really about life.
About life.
It's not about fertility, and it's not about, you know, it covers that because that was part of your
experience. Yeah,
the book is in. There's many parts to this book. That's the final chapter. It challenges assumptions. It's a very uplifting book. Ultimately,
great.
You'll cry, you'll laugh. Yeah. Ultimately, you know, it's very uplifting.
And we get to know Mary Custis throughout this book, don't we?
You do. Oh. Yeah. I mean, you know, that part of me, you know, every day I'm sort of pretty, you know, loose and easygoing, but that part of me was when I was sort of in the trenches a lot of my childhood. There's a lot about Collingwood and growing up in Collingwood. That was sort of my my golden era, like 10 years of my life, which I loved growing up in Collingwood. And then I got thrown into the middle class, which I did not like. So it's a lot about that, but it's a lot about making the most of whatever you're dealt, no matter, you know, how difficult, and assuming that things do get better and helping aid that.
Yeah.
With a point of view and decisions and resilience, you know, because it's really difficult to survive those things when you have no hope, you know.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
It affects everyone. It affects everything. It affects your work, your relationships, your health, you know, everything. And you've got to think, you know, the person that died, would they have wanted that for you too? It's emotionally difficult at times, but it is an easy read. And I wrote it with very simple objectives, and that was to put the reader in my shoes and to be as completely honest about those feelings that I experienced as I felt them. And they're not always politically correct, you know, as you would expect. But,
yeah,
you know,
course.
It was about exactly what I felt at every point. And I remember all of those feelings very vividly. And I think that's why people respond to it, because they do get an intravenous experience into somebody else's life, a lot of which, like I said, was joyous, and a lot of which was very difficult.
Oh, I seriously cannot wait to get my hands on it. It's available.
It's online, and there's an audio book too. But if you need to know anything about where the book's at and all of that stuff, you go to my Facebook page, which I've got for the book, and it's Mary Custis All I Know.
Yes.
And there's a Facebook page, and there's excerpt, and there's, you know, some photos of my childhood, and there's other people's stories. People are really expressing their pain. There's a lot of similar stories out there.
Yeah, and I've read some of the comments, and it's just, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's been really well received. One final question. What do you think Effie would think of the book?
I think, you know, I think she'd read it and want to slash her wrist. I don't think, no, I mean, she'd like it ultimately, but she has an issue with Mary because, you know, she feels like, you know, Mary's been, you know, some sort of leech. It's been trying to capitalise on her success. So I think she thinks Mary's all a bit too bloody serious, you know, would be nothing without her. So I think she'd have a very healthy opposite point of view on it. I mean, you know, she's a sook as well. I think she'd probably bawl her eyes out and then get the shits because she smudged her mascara. But I think she'd really dig it, but she'd never admit it, you know?
Yeah, I don't think she'd admit it either.
Yeah.
Yeah, she wouldn't want to tell her mates. But, yeah. Hey, Mary Custis, thank you so much for joining us today on Joy.
And pleasure. And thank you to Joy, and especially you, for always wanting to promote anything, whether it's bloody up or down or round or round.
Oh, hello, of course. I think you're an amazing, amazing comedian, and you've warmed so many hearts. So we think you're amazing, so we'll always support you.
They're my little minimized, marginalized community, much like I've been for most of my life. So I thank everyone. And, you know, everyone keeps turning up to a date with Effie, which I'm coming back to do again. I'm doing a show on the 19th of July in Yarraville, which is gorgeous.
It's it's a great little venue.
Yarraville.
Yeah.
Yarraville is so cute.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, look, it's a real gorgeous community.
Yeah, and it's, you know, so they've done everything they can to really, you know, make it look incredible. It looks like the set of the Sullivans or something.
Yeah.
But, I'm doing a show there on the 19th of July, and it is frigging hilarious. It is so funny. Effie's never been funnier, fessing up all her private life, which is limited, but of course she's milked, you know, still talking about her virginity and trying to find a husband.
Yeah, she's still a virgin. I can't believe it.
A husband, I mean access to money. so come and see it. You can go on Effie's Facebook, Effie Goodfang, for all the details on that, and I'd love to see you there.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.